It's good.
Oh, that's pretty awesome that we got your sweet German accent on the episode. But everybody, welcome back to episode 147 of the Verbal Shenanigans podcast. I'm coming off a big one last week where we had Dave Andrechuk, hockey legend. So if you didn't hear that one, go back and check that one out. But we also got a big special one for you today on episode 147. But we have a lot of really cool sponsors on the podcast that really help us out. And we really appreciate them and help support them. And they help support us. And it's a big, happy, weird family. Speaking of happy and weird, Alex, welcome back to doing the ads.
Hey, guys.
She was so enamored last week that she was like, you know what? I want to sit in on this. But then we messed up the first one and she wanted to record, didn't want to do the second one because she, quote, wanted to eat snacks and take a walk. Well, let's get through this then. All right. First sponsor of the podcast is Susan Robb. She is a... She's from Toronto, and she's a well-known speaker agent to six well-known speakers in North America and a brand ambassador to our good friend Paul Tempa. She also helped us get Dave Andrechuk and Coach Jim Johnson and a bunch of great speakers we've had on this podcast before. Susan is very good at getting putting together workshops and things for her speakers. So if you are interested, make sure you check out Susan Robb on LinkedIn and on Twitter and give her hello and tell her Verbal Shenanigans sent you. Use her. Get some interesting people to come speak to your people. Now, we are very happy to have a couple different breweries that help sponsor this podcast. The first one, Alex, is in – well, it's Manskirt Brewing located in –
Hackettstown, New Jersey.
Oh, yeah. Manskirt Brewing is one of our longest sponsors here. They now have 8 seasonally inspired taps rotating all the time. What do they got going on at the brewery?
Yes, so they're releasing their popular Alt 4 German Alt beer this
Alt
week.
F4.
Alt F4. Damn it. I messed it up again.
All right.
German Alt beer. Their Maibach called H-Town Helles will be out on Mayfest, May 20th. And they're closing down the town and doing food, music, and great beer with Ziegmeister, which is also right down the street. And then also on May 20th is the beer, barbecue, and bacon showdown in Morristown.
You must get beer from Ziegmeister. And Manskirt. Give Manskirt some love on Facebook and Instagram and all that fun stuff. Tell them Verbal Shenanigans sent ya. Demented Brewing is the other brewery that we are very happy to work with. They've been around for 2 years now. They just celebrated their 2-year anniversary, and they're going to be releasing Awesomely Demented, a Belgian quad brewed with Awesome the Podcast, fellow podcast guys, to celebrate their 4-year anniversary. This week, they got a double can release of Gallows Hill and a Start Day coming up next Monday. Start Day, strawberry cream ale. that is Demented Brewing, one of my favorites. And go check out that mural on that wall. It's one of my favorite things to
That's
look at.
Sick, yeah.
And Obi's here. I am also happy, very happy to have Adirondack Brewery on board with the podcast. Basically, my favorite brewery to visit. We were just there about a week and a half ago, 2 weeks ago. Had a lovely lunch and some delicious beers.
Yes, we were. It was great.
Yes, we were. Adirondack Brewery located right in Lake George, New York, right off of Canada Street there. They want you to know that they have tickets coming up for their Out of Hibernation party, which means people are coming out of hibernation. Bears, Alex, we know you're frightened of bears.
Yeah, I like bears.
Bear news. But their annual Coming Out of Hibernation party will be held at the pub and brewery on Wednesday, May 10th from 4 to 7. And they're very excited to announce the official release of their cider project at the party. The cider project is produced in the dry champagne style and is made from 100% New York State apples blended to their unique formula and produced by their friends at Beacon Skiff Apple Farms. And it's naturally gluten-free. That's going with my diet. And I'm trimming down, slimming down, getting my nice Lake George body ready for the summer. But Adirondack Brewery, give them some love on the old Facebook machine. And finally, Trivia Revolution. Alex here is a trivia champion every week.
Yeah, not really.
No. But she has finished last place. And she has won prizes because last place can win. So you don't have to be a big winner. But if you are a winner, you can win prizes to the restaurant, prizes to New Jersey breweries. And it's always a good time. You have locations all over New Jersey. Wednesdays, you want to come see yours truly at Tap House 15. I host. And it's also the best one they got. Just, throwing it out there. Yeah, Trivia Revolution, fueled by craft weed. I almost said craft weed. Craft beer. Okay, we don't have any craft weed sponsors yet. But With that, guys, very special podcast. Now we have Chef Eric Levine. You may have seen him on Chopped. He's done things for the James Beard Foundation. He has two restaurants in New Jersey, Morris Tap and Grill and Paragon Tap and Table. Both have Trivia Revolution there. He has just an amazing story from cancer surviving to opening his own restaurant to, you know, getting his life on track. Really fascinating interview. With that, enjoy the podcast, Chef Eric. Bye.
Bye.
Hey, this is Chef Eric Levine, and you're listening to Verbal Shenanigans. Fire it up.
But our shenanigans are cheeky and fun.
Yeah, I mean, his shenanigans are cruel and tragic.
Which makes them not shenanigans at all, really.
Evil shenanigans.
I swear to God, I'll pistol whip the next guy that says shenanigans.
How did you answer the phone?
The fuck do you want? Yeah.
Well, anyway, with that, welcome to Verbal Shenanigans, episode, 147? As we climb.
I think that's a prime number.
And climb to,
nowhere.
To nowhere.
Yeah.
But we are very happy to be back. If you heard last week's episode,
you did.
It was a pretty good one. If you didn't, you should, especially if you are a sports fan or a hockey fan in general. Dave Andrechuk joined us, which is not like a nobody. Like, he's like pretty much in the Hall of Fame.
Pretty much.
He should be.
I wouldn't.
What'd you say? 40. We did the
42.8% of his goals were on power plays.
How does that even make sense? That's almost half that he's scoring on power. That means he's just deadly when one man's off the ice. Like,
it's all strategy. I mean, I guess it's like some pitchers are better in relief or against certain batters. It's just the strategy of it all.
Yeah, but I mean, we've never had a round of so many good guests like this consistently.
I can't think
Never. We've had big guests sporadically.
Mm-hmm.
We've had amazing guests. We've had great episodes with two guests. We've never had like a consistency of this many, like one either names or like it's never happened before.
I mean, I can pretty much say this entire year I can't look back to an episode. I'm like,
No, this year has been incredible. For the podcast. And you know it's incredible when there's no episodes where me and Mike just have to talk to each other.
So I had problems trying my shoe yesterday, Scott.
Yeah, I had problem pooing. I'm backed up. What do you do? But we used to get excited when we, like, this is how I know we're grown. We used to get excited when we had, like, a fellow comic on, you know? Mm-hmm. Not that's bad, but we'd be like, oh, KP's coming on. Like, woo, I can't believe we got him. Like, it's going to be good. And I was like, we had an NHL Hall of Famer on.
Yeah.
You know?
What'd you do, KB Burke?
Yeah, Burke.
You the hell?
You loser.
Hanging out with Ritu Chandra. You know Hall of Famer.
You're nothing to me, KB.
Just because you came from Florida don't mean you're like Dave Andrechuk.
No. No. But, everything is going good in podcast land.
I looked at the votes.
You sent me text messages this weekend. Mm-hmm.
I was dying this weekend.
Yes. Now, normally you wear your dying on your sleeve, like you take pictures and have fun, but it doesn't usually relate to you texting me like, oh my God, I'm ready to die.
I was anguishing.
Let me find the first one. Okay. The first text message came in. I want to blow my brains out. Izzy wanted to see a friend of her mom's, in quotes, friend, and been 2 hours of stories involving people I don't know and not one interesting.
Yeah.
Okay.
So the preface of this is on Saturday, we had to take care of a couple things. Izzy had to transfer over a title to a car from her ex who passed away.
Okay.
And we did some other stuff. We saw what do you call her, quote, unquote, mom and dad, which is her friends that she considers her parents. Oddly enough, on Friday, I actually met her father. but that's another story. Okay. But, you know, took out the dogs. He, the father, Papa Dino, he has a Jewish deli in Red Bank that we went to, and we had some good food there. Day was going pretty good. And then we're trying to figure out what to do next. Nothing going movie-wise. Everything looks horrible out there. Nothing.
Yeah, it's funny you say that. We had a boring night the other night. We're like, well, let's go to the movies.
Yeah, everything's like,
waiting for the summer
to
come.
The best answer was we can see Beauty and the Beast again.
Ooh.
Yeah, it was a good movie, but I don't need to go. Nope. So as I'm trying to figure out something to do, all of a sudden she goes, oh, a friend of Sharon's, who is her quote-unquote friend mom, her adopted mom.
Okay.
She's saying, oh, you're in the area. Come on by.
Come on down.
So I stopped looking for anything to do. I'm like, all right, this is a friend. I guess if you want to go in their house, we can do that. And off the bat, I kind of figured I'm going into a bad spot where, like, she puts a call on speaker. And I'm like, so where are you? And it's like, I live on blah, blah, blah in Red Bank. And I Google. I bring it up. I'm like, all right, God knows why. This town has a blah, blah, blah boulevard and a blah, blah, blah lane. So okay. I'm like, all right, which one are you? And she proceeds to tell me directions to get there. And I'm like, no, no, no.
Just what's the address?
Just give me the address.
Directions
would not stop.
Directions in 2017. Don't even tell me directions. Just give me the address. The perfect address. That's it.
And like, she's like, well, you're going to go past this, but if you see this, you went too far. I know I won't see it because you're going to give me the address.
Isn't that amazing? Like, directions are such a thing of the past. And I remember, like, when MapQuest came out, like, following the MapQuest printouts, I'm like, oh, my God, go 2.0.
Oh, yeah. You had to print it out.
You had to print it out. And
like, you're driving, and you thought looking at your cell phone was dangerous and all, looking over that piece of it. Wait, 2.5. How long is that? How many minutes is that?
And then, like, you're looking down at your dashboard clock and the thing and stuff like that. Man, that seems like a long time ago, but I think that's one cool thing about when we've grown up, we've seen both sides of it. We've seen the basically no technology getting places and talking on phones and all that, and now we've seen the everything.
I had a buddy, like, if we were playing around, somebody would pull up and ask for direction, he would just make up something just to laugh at the fact he's getting somebody lost.
Up your ass and to the left. Okay, back to your story.
Yeah, so we get there and the place is a hoarder's dream come true, and it's just, it's old albums, it's old newspapers, it's old this, it's old that. There were 13 seltzer bottle water bottles on the fireplace. And off the bat, I'm kind of like, So we sit on the couch.
You turn into a dairy cow.
Yeah, pretty much. Yes. And we had to sit down after they clear out the newspapers that are on the couch. And the wife of the relationship.
Now let me step in. You said they have 11 old seltzer bottles, like these clown water sprayers, over their fireplace for some reason.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, it made no sense. I didn't want to ask because then I would have heard another story and I would have killed myself pretty much. So the wife of the relationship, I forget her name already, she's going into stories. I mean, she's going into details of the color of the buttons on the person's outfit. Mm-hmm. It's mind-numbing.
Are these people very elderly at this? Like,
I would say probably late 60s or late 70s. Okay. I put them on. I'll preface it with, they're good people, but these are the people that you need other people around. So it's like, all right, you're pretty boring. Let me go to somebody else for a conversation kind of deal.
Yeah, and you also said won't be long, ... dying.
Yeah.
Now, what's funny about this is that you said won't be long at 5:56 p.m.
Mm-hmm.
And then at 7:45 p.m., you text me, we're about an hour away from home.
Yeah.
So,
So woman just keeps on going with stories. Says names, do you know blah, blah, blah. I'm like, no, I have no idea what blah, blah, blah is. I barely know the people I know. And it was just endless stories. And Isabel, love her. She's a talker. That woman is a new level type of talker. And it lasted so long that unfortunately by the time we were kind of like, oh, we got to go for the dog. It's like, but I'm making salmon burgers for you. So we had to wait as they
stepped in. Ugh, they made us food, damn it.
Yeah.
Another 30 minutes of this crap, exclamation, exclamation, exclamation. 30 minutes later, still haven't put food on the table. Izzy is texting me, apologize. Quarter of my Saturday, I will never get back.
Yeah.
I feel like I'm narrating this.
Yeah. All right,
now go ahead.
Yeah, so that I thought salmon burgers, it's like, oh, it pre-made, blah, blah, blah. No, apparently they have the whole technique where they open up cans of salmon.
Where they go down to the river and catch it. Come on back.
I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah, okay.
So it's a full process of that.
It's an old school method where we catch the fish.
Yeah.
Dinner could be a half hour or 3 days away.
We know a place where bears sit, and salmon generally are there. So
the wrestling away from the bear is tough, though. It is tough.
It was just the most mind-numbing, horrible experience, and it ended up being like a big fight with me and Izzy. And it's
Hold on.
Okay.
They have an oil painting of a woman breastfeeding, yeah, too.
That was the only thing entertaining me.
And you sent me the picture, and sure enough,
it's an oil painting of a breastfeeding.
And not like a glorious, like...
Yeah, not artsy. It's just like somebody was in the park feeding their baby, and they're like, oh, yeah, let me stretch that.
Yeah,
it kind
of looks like a picture, like they took a Polaroid and then painted the Polaroid.
Yeah.
Like, so you said that. So I naturally thought you were having a great time.
Oh, yeah, yeah, the blast.
All right, so now let me ask you a couple questions here.
Go ahead.
All right. So you're in the hoarder house. There's hoarder seating, or like you sitting on like a pile of newspaper?
I'm sitting on a couch. They had to clear out the space for us to sit down.
Naturally.
And clearly this couch was made 40 years ago.
So the dust. Yeah. Now, tell me about the smell of the house. Where we just must?
I don't have the greatest sense of smell, so I can't really... If it was bad, I would have known, and I didn't feel anything. I guess that's the best answer.
Okay. So you're sitting there, right? You're sitting there, and your girlfriend's having the conversation. And are they including you in the conversation? Are you set? I could obviously tell that you're not super involved because you're texting me like I want to die.
Yeah, it would be the occasional I'd turn my head and go, uh-huh, to be nice.
Looking around like, okay, this is my last day? Like, all right, I got to take this all in.
Yeah, it was.
There's a woman breastfeeding on the wall. There's cat poo over there. Mm-hmm. Like, what is going? Like, and what type of level hoarder? Like, would this be like season one hoarders or like season six where they got to keep going?
I would say probably around season two.
Okay.
They're at the beginning stages. It's still, you can walk around, but you're still kind of like, all right, let me move this group of bottles.
We got to put the picture, the breast, the painting up on the...
This week on Verbal Shenanigans.
All right. So now this caused a little bit of rift or a little bit of fight on the way down?
Well, here's the funny thing about, like, it was, when I say we had a conversation, it was just that woman splattering 50 different stories. And Izzy was basically texting me around 2 hours in. She's like, oh my God, I'm bored. I'm so sorry. And we got out of there, and I was just so, my brain was just in a spot where it's like, I can't believe I wasted half my Saturday, because I'm working on this upcoming Saturday, so I'm losing a day off there, and it's like, my hours are so precious on the weekends, and I can't throw it away for something like that. It's one thing to attempt something fun.
It's a waste
fun.
Of time.
Yeah, it's one thing to attempt something fun, and it wasn't that fun. It's another thing where you just basically murdered my enjoyment for this.
Right. Day. Well, you also, when you attempt something fun, you chose to do that, so if you fail, it's okay.
Yeah.
All right.
So we're driving back, and I basically know my levels of argument. It's either be silent or yell.
Right.
So I'm trying to be the nice thing. I don't blame her for it, but I don't want to talk about it, so I'm quiet.
You just want to go in the zone.
Yeah, and I got the radio on, and Izzy, her, when she gets anxious, she puts on reruns of Golden Girls. She does that every morning before work. She watches two episodes of the Golden Girls every morning. This is
like a sitcom right here.
Yeah.
Right.
It's kind of interesting watching the Golden Girls. I watched an episode today where apparently Betty White got molested by her dentist.
Really?
I'm like, that's an episode? There was an episode where she's like, I went in to my dentist. He put me under the cast, and as I was coming to, I noticed my blouse was undone.
Nice.
So it's nice. Like, you can't get away with that these days.
Yeah, you can't laugh about anything.
No.
You're not allowed.
There was an episode where...
we had people sympathizing with Aaron Hernandez on Facebook. We're sympathizing with a murderer.
Mm-hmm.
Don't make those suicide jokes. Really?
Mm-hmm.
Really? So my joke is more offensive than him taking somebody's life.
Yeah.
is the state.
It's so sad the murderer did the job that we wish... If he got convicted of murder and got the death penalty, he would be like, yay, good job. The fact that he got life and he committed suicide...
But that's the other thing. If there was a death penalty, so many people would be like, oh, don't kill him. He could reform himself. Mm-hmm. No, what are we wasting? Yeah. What are we wasting?
And now the Patriots owe him money.
What are we wasting lettuce for?
Mm-hmm. Come on. Exactly.
Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah. So she starts watching that, and I'm like, all right, I don't want to get an argument. I'm going to be nice. I'm going to turn down the radio, and as I turned down the radio, she's like, oh, you're listening to your radio, watch that. I'm like, no, you're watching your Golden Girls, do that. And she's like, no, you do that. And it got to the point where I'm like, all right, then I'm not doing anything. And then we drove an hour and 15 minutes in complete silence.
Ooh,
yeah.
Icy cold.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
and then the next day I woke up and we kind of had a kind of decent-sized argument, and we kind of talked things through, and she's like, why didn't you tell me you wanted to go? I'm like, I'm over your friends. What's it like if I tell you 30 minutes in I want to go? And she's right. Like, oh. And she's like, well, you got to verbalize more stuff. I'm like, oh, okay. Then we went to the winery, and we were all good, and we're back to Izzy and Mike kissing pictures.
Yeah, well, I mean, like, everyone gets mad at each other. It's mm-hmm. I think it's how you rebound from things and how you let things go. Like, currently, right now, as I'm podcast, Alex is mad at me for calling her a weirdo.
Well, that was vicious.
And the only reason I called her a weirdo is because I went in the shower and she said, I was like, oh, I stink. And she was like, why do you stink? And I'm sure she was kind of joking. But I was also like, oh, why'd you say that? Like, I was just kind of overreacting, being like weird. And I was just like, oh, you know, like, oh, that's a weird question. Why'd you ask that? But it's like, you know, sometimes the littlest things are just like something that rubs someone the wrong way. But it's also like,
when you're in the same room for 12 hours a day, about.
Right. It's literally just.
It's about to happen.
And in our place, you're literally in the same room all day long. But it's just all about, like, I think the only. Like, everyone. I look at my parents, they argue. It's just like. It's how you resolve things that I think is what makes you a good couple or good pair. But speaking of good pairs. There's no segue to that.
Is he cooking? Speaking pears? Of
a guy who can cook good pears, that's what I was going to say.
That was a good segue.
Now you like to cook, right?
Yeah, I do.
I like to cook also. I've actually grown to like cooking a lot more as years goes on. I love grilling. I love I like cooking with like a. Like, my spice palette is pretty much always the same, but it's like garlic, salt, pepper, things like the onion.
Italian seasoning for me, garlic, salt.
Yeah. But we've had a couple chefs on the show.
Mm-hmm.
We've had Brian Duffy,
yep.
Arnold Mint, and then Russell Davis to an extent. He's more of a bartender, mixologist.
He's a drink cook.
Yeah. But we've had some, like, food people on the show. But we have Chef Eric Levine on the show.
Oh, nice.
Now, I I hosted trivia for them at one point for Trivia Revolution.
Yep. Great sponsor.
And he just has a really, really interesting story. You might have seen him on Chopped. You might have seen him doing things for the James Beard Foundation. He's done a lot of stuff. So with that, let's give Eric Levine a call right now.
Let's do it.
Eric, I'm going to help you.
Hey, is this Chef Eric?
This is.
Eric, it's Scott Brennan here and my cohort here, Mike Berlow. Welcome to the show.
Hey, how are you?
Good, man.
Doing well.
How's it going?
How busy as a one-armed paper hanger.
A one-armed paper hanger.
Think about that.
Yeah.
Let it marinate.
I don't have enough time to think about
that. See, I hear
Scott,
you.
He would be busier than a two-armed one. Yeah. I just figured it out.
But, Eric, I was just saying that I actually, for a brief period there, hosted trivia at one of your restaurants over at Paragon.
Very cool.
And, you know, I've heard your name for a while and seen you on Food Network and a couple things like that. And actually, more than one person said you should reach out to Chef Eric. So thanks for giving us a few minutes here.
Absolutely. Absolutely. No, it's my pleasure. It's always fun to talk about stuff. You know, lots of stuff going on.
Well, we promise we will do that.
What's important stuff to you?
We're going to talk
about all everything. Food, people, things.
That's a lot of stuff we could talk
about. So get rid of all those sports questions.
Unless it's about the Rangers. So, you know.
Ugh.
Well, he's the only one alive of the three of us.
Come on, you got two restaurants in Jersey. There's no Ranger talk.
I'm from Brooklyn, so you know.
All right, you get somewhat of a pass, even though they are my most hated franchise in sports. But anyway,
you a Devils fan?
I am.
Okay, well, I can understand.
I'm a Flyers fan.
Yeah, don't no, you're not even allowed to speak.
Flyers yet. Fan, yeah. I don't even hate the Islanders. I really dislike the Flyers.
Yeah, me too.
Nobody hates the Islanders. They just exist.
It's
like you go to a game and it's like, what? That's still a team? They allowed it? They haven't moved to Portland yet?
Yeah, right. Or Vegas, right?
Yeah. I mean,
they were a franchise.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, the Rangers, like, I grew up hating because when I was a kid, everybody was a Rangers fan, and they made fun of the Devils so bad. Like, the Devils were a joke until 94, 95 came.
Yeah.
And then it was like a 20-year good run. So
yeah.
We won that argument. But anyway, so, Eric, you currently have two restaurants in Jersey.
Yes.
Morris Tap and Grill and Paragon. You say what were you gonna say? You're working on a third?
Working on a third, yeah.
Jesus.
Oh.
Yep. Working on a third, actually third and fourth. Third is probably gonna happen September, October.
Really? Where is that one gonna be?
Yeah. In Hamilton.
Mm. Oh, so you're gonna be real spread out.
Yeah, and then I'm gonna get even more spread out when we open up in 2018 in Vegas.
Wow.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. Huh. So that should be cool. And I'm working on my third cookbook right now.
Nice. Well, let's go back in time a little bit before we knew all the stuff going on in the present. You're a pretty young guy still. What are you, 40?
Yeah, I'm 47. I'm not young. Oh. Well, in terms of kitchen, no, not anymore. But mentality, yes.
So you've been, when did you get into the food thing and what made you really like enjoy it? Were you always a cook around the house or did it find you?
You know what? When I was 6 years old, I got my first cookbook. I come from a broken home, so I saw my dad like once a month, and he gave me that cookbook, and he's like, we can make anything you want. And I'm like, cool. So I skipped through it. It was a Disney cookbook, and I found Goofy's Chocolate Mousse, and we made it. And then back then, they had the old handle whisk machine, like the little blender.
Right.
And it had the two blades on it, that came off. Well, my dad was like, whatever you do, don't turn it up because it'll splatter all over the place. So
I'm assuming
exactly what he told me not to do.
Tonight on TGIF.
Exactly. And blew the ceiling with chocolate mousse all over the place. It was great.
Awesome.
And that sparked the interest. And then growing up in Brooklyn, the first restaurant I worked at was a place called Jan's Ice Cream Shop. And the first day there as a dishwasher at 11 years old, the chef walked out. Order came back in the kitchen and said, "Okay, let me teach you how to cook." And I was like, I okay. So I did. So that led me down the path of the insanity, you know, working in the hot, screaming, yelling kitchen. Yep. There was fire and alcohol, and it was like home. So,
I mean, you hear that a lot. We've interviewed a chef or two. We had Brian Duffy on and Russell Davis. Oh, cool.
Arnold Mint.
Yeah, Arnold Mint. So we had a couple chefs. And it's funny how a lot of you, it seems – a common thread is a young start in the kitchen, and also like starting obviously at the very bottom, whether it's dishwasher even or like to line cook. Where did you start doing? Like, what kind of foods were you making, and were you?
You know what, my first, you know, like I said, the first venture was at this ice cream pop shop, and it was great. So we were doing like, you know, traditional American crap back then, and. Then when I turned 14, after some major trouble that I got myself into, I wound up going to France, from France to Italy, from Italy to Japan, and then I came back and went to the Culinary Institute of America. So very fortunate to have gone through a lot of weird stuff at a young age. And
that's a weird statement. I got in a ton of trouble, and I ended up touring the world in France.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know what? Everyone has a story and everything. Yeah, listen, I was 13 years old, and I was a heroin addict. Right. And, you know, it was the choices were continued down the path that would get me killed. Running and selling drugs at 13 would get me killed. Well, my, you know, grandfather would kill me because I wasn't doing the right things. So he said, "You love the kitchen so much, let's get you cleaned up and get you shipped out of here because this environment is working for you." Uh-huh. So 14, he's like, "Okay, I got a person for you to work." You know, so out I went.
Really? And, so how'd you, who'd you get hooked up with over there? Like a
chef's name is the chef's name is Jean-Louis Lemaison in Lyon, France. And so I spent 2 years with him, getting my ass handed to me. And then from him, I went to another chef, the Brunello family. They also have a vineyard in Tuscany, and I worked for them. And then he sent me to a chef in Japan at the Otani Hotel, and I spent a couple of years there working for Chef Lee. So, it became a really interesting early start to the career. And then I came back and, you know, went to the Culinary Institute of America because they wanted that. I had to have that paper back then.
Of course.
And, you know, I went from being like I couldn't sit still in a classroom, and my teachers liked me, so they gave me good grades to, you know, and I couldn't care less because I was getting high all the time, to, you know, graduating in second in my class, which was kind of a fun thing, you know?
Mm. Wow. That's quite a whirlwind of stuff right there.
Yeah. When you had to deal with so many different chefs, what is the biggest differential? Is it preparation? Is it style? Where do they differ?
Well, yeah, fortunately for me, having, you know, working with these chefs from these different countries, I think it was the biggest thing was a different approach to food. You know, it was one of those things I wish I knew then what I know now type of thing, because I would have paid that much more attention. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I was young. I was really a kid. But yeah, every chef had their own style, their own. Even the sous chefs had their own approach to the kitchen. And, you know, being the ugly American, you know, made it even more interesting. Yeah. So the chefs had their own style of cooking, which really incorporated into how I cook now. But probably the biggest influence was when I graduated CIA. I worked for David Burke at the River Cafe. And you know, in my last cookbook, Small Bites, Big Flavors, he actually did the forward for me, which is really kind That's of a awesome. Cool thing. But when I worked for him, I still had that chip on my shoulder from being from Brooklyn, and he, you know, he kicked my tail something fierce, and to the point that one day I wanted to just actually take him outside and, you know, teach him that, yeah, you may be the chef, but I can still kick your ass. Yeah, I'm a third degree black belt in Shotokan, so you will not be a problem for me unless you have a gun, you know. And but I learned so, but I love the guy. He taught me so much about thinking about things from a different perspective, really outside the box approach, and really destroying the box and not having any boundaries, and really just being able to create. So he opened my mind to that. All the things that I knew from working with these great chefs from Europe and from Japan, it really made sense of it all for me, you know.
Now, every chef I've talked to, both like, you know, well known, and even a couple I've known before, it seems to be this, you know, this adrenaline filled, you know, it's not the, you know, people see the TV chef on TV, but at the, you know, you're working in a fast paced environment on your feet, long hours, weekends, holidays. What is the draw to it for you? Like, what is it? Is it the joy of just creating? Is it the environment, or is it everything?
I think it's everything. I mean, you know, like I talk to my guys all the time about how, you know, I wish they could react the way I do to a piece of meat or a fruit or a vegetable and get excited about it. And then, yeah, it's the adrenaline of everything. It's the adrenaline of, you know, making my customers happy, making my staff happy, seeing the creativity come to play. I just did a dinner this past Thursday at the James Beard Foundation, and it's kind of a big honor to be invited to do a dinner there. And this happened to be my sixth one. But what I did is, you know, I created a menu that hasn't been done before there, which was called a threesome. So each dish was a trio of an item. So we had quail, we had tuna, we had beef, we had chocolate, and then we had scallop. So for each dish, and it was a very challenging plate up because each component had different components to it. So it was like having, you know, 15 different dishes coming to you. So, you know, I truly believe that even though I've been doing this for, you know, this summer will be 37 years, I just challenge myself. And that's the excitement of it, you know, working on, you know, having the two restaurants, having a ravioli company, an online ravioli company, working on the third cookbook, working on the third restaurant, and always constantly challenging. I think it's the rush of that. It's the challenge of, you know, how can I bring fun things to my staff and to my customers, and how could I constantly be in the mode of creativity? And I think it's important to share and learn, and I get great educations all the time. I'm really hooked up with Donaldson's Farm in Hackettstown.
Right.
And Greg Donaldson is a, in my eyes, a genius. Like, just spending time with him on how he grows his product so I could use it at my restaurant. You know,
that's awesome.
People forget the connection, and it's so cool. We did a photo shoot there 2 weeks ago for the cookbook, and him and I were just talking about the growing process. And I said to him, can I just spend a week with you 24/7, just hanging out and bothering you and asking you? He's like, dude, you can come any day you want. So I was like, you know, I'm like, if I had that much time, I would, because I think the educational part is so important. We never stop learning. And I think when you stop learning, that's when you got to stop doing it.
It'd be great, you know, if you showed up and he just made you work hard for a week, like
which would be fine by me. Yeah, I love getting my hands dirty, and the learning process is so important. So we talk about what is it that drives the machine. It's that constant learning, constant trying to perfect it. When we make a burger, let's make it the best burger it could be. You know, when we're searing foie gras, let's make it the best it could be. When we're making our gelatos and sorbets in house, same way. So it's all those things, that constant charge of making it better than it was. Yeah, even during service, you know, Fridays and Saturdays are a beast at one of my restaurants. Like, yeah. Insane beast. And you have to control the chaos around you.
Right.
And it's not just the guys in the kitchen, it's the front of the house team, it's the customer who ultimately we're here for. So I serve two people. I work for my staff, and I work for my customers. And I think that I truly believe that if you can get that into your head, it's such a better experience. And we're not perfect, and life isn't perfect. And it's how do you fix the things without freaking out and killing anybody? That's, you know, as long as you don't lose a limb or a body, you're okay for the day.
Now, let me ask you something. You obviously we're in the middle of I would call it a food revolution, you know, like in
absolutely.
Everywhere you go, it's got good food. And if you don't, you're done, you know, you're closed. Mm-hmm. But so you have two different restaurants. I've eaten at both your restaurants numerous times. How do you – and you're also doing the – you know, like you just said, farm the table and the importance of – where do you find the balance of, hey, I'm creating this fresh, unique food, but without it getting like too pretentious and weird? Like, where do you try to see yourself or center yourself where it's both pushing the envelope but also not like – you know, something where people are like, oh, God, like, I got to go spend a bazillion dollars to eat, like, a crumb of food or something like that.
Right. I think it's understanding your customer. There's a place for everybody, in my opinion. You know, you have the Thomas Kellers, and, you know, from Per Se and the French Laundry, mm-hmm. and you have the Grant Achanfa Alinea in Chicago. Those guys do an amazing job for what they do, and there's a customer base for them. So they want to be the best in that genre of culinary.
Right.
To me, it's about creating the simple food that has impact and flavor and presentation. But and you also have to know your customer base. You know, there's a lot that I love that I enjoy, but at the same time, it's if I'm not going to sell it, what's the point? It's like having the greatest food in the world. But no one's interested in it.
Yeah, I was just interested in a burger that day. Sorry, man. I know the greatest food on earth was on the menu, but, you know.
Yeah. But it's also things, you know, we play the game. I, you know, there's stuff that I put on the menu that I know after a week or two that's right. not working, you know, and it's, you know, you got to take the ego out of it. And no one wants to hear, you know, oh, that dish sucks, you know, and, you know, you're putting your heart and soul into it. You're spending hours creating and recipe and testing. You're like, oh, this is awesome. And then you send it out and someone's like, oh, this is meal puke, man. Why would you serve this? You're like, womp, womp, you know, and my guys sometimes get more devastated about that I do because they have pride in what they do. They're passionate about what they do, and when you get that punch in the face, it's like, okay, I gotta stop and readjust myself. So over the years, and I guess maybe it comes with age and it comes with not having an ego about it, I think you have more success with it. And we're not perfect, and we try to you know, constantly turn the page with things and recreate. So we use seasonality. I work with a lot of farmers. So mm-hmm. we talk about farm to table. Farm to table is kind of an interesting tagline because it's all farm to table. If you say local to me, then I get it.
Right.
When people mm-hmm. start spewing the farm to table, sure. well, you know, did you go to the farm? Did yeah. you meet with the, you know, the fishmonger? did you meet with the cheesemonger? You know, did you actually get in there? You know, I spend time talking to my purveyors.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's important. You create the relationship with the butcher, with the, you know, the guy who grows your greens, or it's important. And people forget that. And there's a lot that goes into it. And that's why in this, the new cookbook, I put a lot of emphasis on knowing your sources, knowing where the food's coming from. You know, organic has a play to it, but it's also sometimes when you talk about produce, organic produce, there's a fine line between what's organic and what's not.
Right.
You know, that's where I love Greg, you know, Donaldson from Donaldson Farm. He educated me on how the chemicals that are in a lot of the quote, you know, organic actually are worse for you than some of the non-organic foods. And you got to know your sources. You know, you got to know where the fish is, you know, where it's coming from, where you're sourcing it from. Sustainable fish, you know, is it destroying the earth and is it destroying the ocean and how it's being, you know, how it's recovering itself? You know, when you're aware of that and you're in touch with that stuff, it's really cool to kind of create outside of that, you know, within that environment and say, okay, I won't use sea bass because it's becoming an extinct animal. I mean, for years, swordfish disappeared.
Mm.
Yeah. You know, so now it's back and it's breeding and it's good. So people have done the right thing by backing off of it, let it recycle and be aware, you know.
As you have now two going to four places, can you still go into the restaurant and be hands-on and be the chef, or do you have to basically become just a management type and oversee situations?
No, for me, I have to be hands-on. You know, I can't not have my hands in my food. It's kind of an important thing to me because there's too many of that style chef out there. I'm not a desk jockey. You know, I'm a cook.
Right.
You know, it's like I get invited to do a lot of things and you know, they put that tag celebrity chef thing, which makes me crazy because at the beginning and end of the day, I'm a cook. It's what I do. I don't need celebrity. I don't need anything. If I could use my name or lend my name to a charity, which I do a lot, that they could help raise money, I'm in. Call me whatever you want. Call me Donald Duck for all I care. If it's going to help raise money. But when like an article comes out about something we're doing or when I was on Kelly Live a few months ago, I was very specific and said, please do not use the word celebrity chef. You can just say Eric Levine, you know, just because it just, you know, it's like saying master chef.
Right.
Like, you know, you got to be certified to be a master chef. That's a certification. I don't even, you know, like, you're a master? Like, I mean, just cut me off. Stop. Yeah. Stop. Cook, man. Just cook.
Bow you towards know, my baby carrots.
Exactly.
I'm a master chef.
Yeah. Oh, my God. It's just crazy. It's really bizarre. Like, I talk to a lot of my chef friends, and we talk about, we have the same complaint or the same, like, head-scratching moments where all the cooks are gone. All the passionate people are gone from the kitchen, and we're like the last of our kind. So all this new
generation is
crazy. It's like, yes, exactly. It's like dinosaurs. It's like, what the hell are we doing here? You know, it's crazy to try to get them to understand that it's food. You know, they want to carry their tweezers and have their tattoos. And listen, I have tattoos. I carry tweezers. You know what? I'll put my game up against any kid, and I'll just run them over. And you got to be able to cook first. You want to be fancy. You want to be on TV. You want to have restaurants. You want to have, you know, cookbooks. Great. That didn't happen overnight for me.
Yeah,
that happened, you know, years and years. It's kind of like some 20-year-old kid telling you that they're a consultant. What the hell have you done? You're a life coach? Have you lost everything, life coach dude or girl? You know, what have you done with your life? Mm. All of a sudden you're going to tell other people how to live their life because you lived in a bubble and mommy and daddy gave you everything.
Of course.
Oh, so you know about how hard it is to work and lose everything, you know?
Right.
It's crazy.
No. Eric, I mean, like a big part of your life, and you mentioned the charities and a lot of the stuff you've been through. A big part of your life, and I've seen a few things on you. A job that requires on your feet, hard work, and stuff like that. You have dealt with cancer not once, but I mean, according to articles, there were five times. Correct?
Five times. Yeah.
Jeez,
yep,
unbelievable,
yeah.
Man.
Five times. Yeah. So it's March 12th was. My new birthday, 6 years in remission.
There you go. Congratulations, buddy.
Thank you. Yeah, and it's very interesting to have gone through that, and you know, now I take that experience, and it's really odd that the first four times I didn't get it, and hit with this last time I had what's called Richter's syndrome. It's an advanced form of chronic lymphocytic leukemia, and my oncologist told me basically you have 6 to 8 months to live. Jeez. And that was the day before I had a chemo treatment, a radiation treatment. That was the day before I taped Chopped.
Oh, man.
Yeah. So I went into Chopped like, okay, I'm going to do this stupid show. And you know, I'm just going to go home and just blow my head off, so to speak. And then in the middle of it, I had like one of those moments of clarity where I was just like, wow, I could actually win this. And you know what? There's no poor me in this. I'm going to beat this cancer somehow. I'm going to figure it out. And my doctors are going to help me get there. And wound up beating it and not dead, which is kind of a cool thing. So, you know, it's
yeah, that's pretty cool.
Yeah,
it is. It's a good thing. Well,
it'd be a lot harder to do the interview.
Hey, don't brag. Yeah, I'm living too. Come on now.
Yeah. Well, listen, much to some people's chagrin, I'm still here. You know, lucky. <That's> but you know what it is? It's you learn a lot about yourself when somebody, it's really hard to just explain, but when someone tells you, you're going to die. We're all going to die. We're all going to die. But when someone actually tells you, like, you got 6 to 8 months,
mm-hmm.
just, you know, let that sit in for a moment, and it's like, holy cow. What? You can't. Yeah. I'm invincible. I'm me. I'm the great me. And then you go, oh, yeah, not so much. So it's how do you fire that up? How do you turn that into a positive? Mind over matter. And I learned the strength of the mind. So now things that I do with charities, you know, with helping other cancer patients, with people who are going through it, more so families than actual patients, because that's where a lot of the stress for cancer patients comes from, which is the family member. Mm. They're, oh, I'm worried about you. Oh, I'm worried about you. Yeah, well, you know, me too, but now I got to carry your worry on my back. You know, so you try to take your experience and share and say, listen, let them come to you when they need you. They'll be there. You'll be there. Just do it. You know, and it's hard for people to understand when you're, unless you go through that, it's like anything else, unless you have that toothache or that broken limb and experience that pain, it's hard to describe. So when someone tells you have 6 to 8 months to live and you're hit with that reality, you know, the old saying, you're only immortal for a limited time, and you go, holy cow, this is real. Like, this ain't a joke. Like, oh, one day, you know, we're all going to die. No, this is like happening. We're in real time now. TikTok, you know? So it's how, what do you do with that? What do you do with that experience? You know, you come through it, and now you just have to pay it forward. So the charities I work with, like American Cancer Society, Family Reach, which is a huge one for me, you know, Employment Horizons, which has nothing to do with cancer, but with people. I get involved with a lot of different things because I think when you have a little bit in your life, you pay it forward. Yeah, you know, there's no me in this stuff. It's all about my people, my customers, how I can make a difference for other people, and I'm happy to do that. You know, I get some flack from the family, like when are you gonna take a day off, and I, you know, but you know, I'd rather keep pushing because at the end of the day, I don't want to miss an opportunity or a moment to make a difference, and I think that's for me what it comes down to. So I put 7 days a week, not just because I own restaurants, but because it's important. It's important for me to, you know, maybe it's the insanity of that wait, tomorrow I may not wake up. I want to do it all today,
right?
You know, so right. It's probably part of that, the psychology of it. But yeah, it's, you know, life is interesting, and now what I'm doing, like I'm. I tore my meniscus, so I'm running around with a torn meniscus right now and have surgery in a couple of weeks. And it's like, right, I'm doing the cookbook, so we're doing the photo shoots this past weekend and this coming weekend. Beer dinners, events, off-premise catering. It's right, like, right. Well, you know, no. People are like, when are you going to slow down? I'm like, yeah, you slow down. You take a day off. Yeah. I don't need a day off. La machine.
No, you've suffered through cancer, and then I guess from what I read, not even the same kind of cancer, you know, different, all different things and whatnot. And like you said, yeah. you powered through it and, you know, thank God and went up.
Yep.
How does that, you know, affect your mentality as far as like, hey, a bad day at the kitchen, or you see a chef having an awful day, you know, like that's got to do something for your mindset and being able to put things in perspective. You know, like what is actually a bad day?
And right.
Like
yeah,
what is something that yeah. you know, you're yeah. going to be okay. The days are going to pass.
Well, yeah, and it's interesting. Like I don't know what triggered it, but for a lot of my chef friends, I've become like this thing for them, like the sounding board, this, you know, because I guess I've gone through some really heavy stuff that they know that and they confide in me. And it's a very honor. I'm very honored that someone would think about me in that capacity. And it's weird at times because I'm like, why do you want me? I'm a psychopath. Like I'm going, I'm grooving, I'm doing my thing. Why do you want my, you know? But it's great. I mean, it blows my mind every day. Every day it blows my mind how many people reach out to me. Whether it's chefs, whether it's just people who have family members with cancer, or just, it's bizarre. Social media is a great thing, and I'm very interactive on my, especially on my Instagram. I just truly believe if I could help somebody and get them out of the mindset for the moment and help them kind of shake off whatever it is, you know, I feel like I owe that to the universe, because I was such a shitbag for so long. No, really. I mean, my ego when I was a kid, I mean, I opened my first restaurant. I got 3 stars from the New York Times, 4 stars from the from the Bergen County Record. I was ranked in the top 10 chefs USA, USA Today, Food Art Magazine. So my ego blew up real fast, and no one was there to punch me in the face and go, hey, relax with that, you know. And I don't even think I would have listened, but at least if I had someone who was there to kind of smash me, that would have made it a little bit easier, would have broken so many, you know, made so many people angry at me at that young age. But I was young, and you learn. And now it's like, you know, someone gives me an award, I'm like, oh, okay, but there's somebody else who deserves this more than me. And you know, you get, it's a great, I have the greatest life ever. I wouldn't change a thing from all the garbage, the cancer, the growing up in a really crazy environment. I wouldn't change a thing. The losses, the gains, the everything. It's just been, you know, so far, I mean, I have so much to do. And I'm excited every day to get the opportunity to do it. So, yeah. So you go through stuff and that cancer will knock you right down a million pegs. And then all of a sudden you see the difference you can make in people's lives. And on a daily basis, my cooks, my customers, my employees, my business partners, and just having impact on someone, that's the drive. You know, that's like, cool, I could do something to make someone happy. I'm in. You know, no negative. You know, people who come in negative, I'm like, listen, you can go home. or you could smile and we could work through this together, because I don't want that vibe in my place. I don't want it around me. I don't want it in my food. I don't want it in my no one. I don't care if you're a dishwasher or you're the GM. All I want is positivity, because the day is hard enough. People are hard enough to deal with as far as customers. Let's not make it harder for us. You know, and that's an important thing. People forget that. People forget that it's about people.
Hopefully that's a paid day off if you're grumpy and he sends you home. That'd be great.
Yeah,
well, I'd be pissed off every day coming in.
Yeah, listen, you gotta. My daughter always says, you know, smiles make the world go round, and she's both my kids are rock stars, and it's kind of interesting to be able to see from their perspective how positive they are and how engaged in the world they are, because I didn't think politics when I was a kid. You know, who's thinking that? Now their opinion is their opinion, and they have an opinion, and they don't let a college professor direct them where to go. It's about what they believe. They have a belief system, you know, and it's great. And whether I agree with their thought process or not, majority of the time I do. But listen, they're their own individuals. They know that everything comes down to them doing it. I'm not giving them a thing. They got to work hard for him, helping them with college and cars and whatever. But at the end of the day, they got to work hard. They got to put the work into it. I'm not going to, you know, they don't get a fourth place trophy or participation trophy. Yeah, not my kids. Yeah, never have, never will. I got flack from parents when my kid wouldn't go get the participation trophy. And like, you can't, you know, everyone deserves a trophy. I'm like, no. I didn't get a trophy when I was a kid unless I won.
Right.
I want winners. I don't want average. You want to be average, little Johnny, you know, jackass.
Trust me, I work with kids every day during my day job. It's getting worse and worse and worse with that stuff, unfortunately.
Enough with that. Jeez, Riz, you know?
Now, tell us a little bit about the series Chopped. Out of curiosity, is it what we see on TV? Are you literally blindsided by what they throw at you, or is it just a reality show gimmick?
No, actually, that is all real. That is you, from the time you get, you don't know what's in that basket. That 20 minutes, the 30 minutes, and the 30 minutes is all real. It's pretty interesting how you have to think on your feet, and you know, the goal is to be the best of the worst. You know, just don't, you know, suck the least if you can.
Yeah, suck less.
But it's a great show. Listen, I met so many cool people from it. I'm really good friends with Manit Chauhan, who's one of the judges. She's actually doing the forward on the new cookbook. So it's kind of cool. And I'm friends with Mark Samuelson, Scott Cohen. Yeah, it picked up a really cool vibe after that. And I was on it like 6 years ago, so that was when it was in its infancy.
Right.
Or it became everyone and the school lunch lady.
I know, right?
You know? But it's a franchise and it's a business and it's the most highly rated show. So when people stop me and go, "Hey, didn't I see you on Chopped?" I'm like, "You did." You know, and it's kind of interesting for someone who in the position that I'm in, that someone wants to actually take a picture with me. It's really weird, but it's kind of cool to be like, "Oh wow, look, someone actually recognized this idiot." Yeah.
But let me ask you something. Before we get out of here, when you go home after working at two restaurants and whatever you say, ravioli company you're working on,
yep.
Do you have any urge to cook anymore by the time you get home, or are you just like straight up peanut butter and jelly and go to bed?
No, it's kind of weird. Like if I have the time, you know, I will.
Right.
You know, I'll open up the fridge, see what's there, and say, yeah, what am I going to eat? At this prison moment, I'm really trying to. I'm back in getting healthy and eating better because, I went last year, December, sorry, last, the previous year, I lost 65 pounds between both Decembers.
Wow.
And since I tore my meniscus back in January, I stopped going to the gym and I stopped taking care of me. So I'm at the point now where I'm like really, really aware of how I'm eating.
Right.
And so I try not to eat after 7, 8 PM.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really less food at home at this point right now.
Okay.
But yeah, no, I do. Listen, no one loves enjoys cooking more when he gets home than I do. I'm like, let me watch in the refrigerator, leftover chicken. We're making a burrito, you know, or something.
Hopefully in that voice all the time.
Exactly. Oh yeah. Well, you know what it is? Sunday mornings, my guys hate me. Because all day long, all morning long, I'm Chris Farleying them all day long. Oh, they're the worst. I'm like, you gotta get the French toast on the oven now. Get the fries down. Sausage on the plate. You know, they're like, what is wrong with you? I'm like, I don't know. challenging the Chris Farley of my life down by the river in a van. And they're like, what is wrong with you? I'm like, eh, I can't help it. Sunday morning, you know?
Dad, that was like 18 years ago.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, he still runs through my veins, I guess, you know?
He's I classic. Wish he was still, I wish there was more Chris Farley to go around. But
yep.
You have a lot of different things going on, and you know, you said you got a cookbook coming out. You got more restaurants opening. Where can people go to say hello or check you out? Or well, what should we be looking forward to?
My website, ChefEricLevine.com. My Instagram is probably the best place because I Instagram the hell out of it at ChefEricL. So that's always the best way to find out what I'm doing, where I'm at. And then at the restaurants, you know, I flew back and forth, Morris Tap and Grill. And Clark, Morse Tapper Grill in Randolph, Paragon Tap and Table in Clark. So I go back and forth every day, half day here, half day there. Typically Friday, I'm down at Paragon. Saturday, all day at Morse Tap and Grill, and then Sunday wherever the fire is.
Eric, thanks so much for giving us a few minutes, and good luck with all the new stuff you got going on.
Thank you so much. I appreciate that, and hopefully I'll see you guys and your fans, and you guys have a great night.
All right.
Pretty awesome.
Yeah.
It puts things in perspective, you know, when you're complaining that your back aches and you got to go to work, and this guy's firing up the four restaurants with cancer five times, you know. It's pretty inspiring, you know.
Yeah, I was going to have a game with him, but maybe I'll give it to you here, Scotty.
All right.
Let's play a little Chop for You.
Chopped for me.
Yeah. Okay. So what I got here is I got three different sets of ingredients, appetizer, dinner, dessert. I want to hear whatever you would think you would do with this to make this a meal.
I'm cooking this.
Yes, you are cooking this.
All right, let's hear it.
All right. Here is your appetizer.
Right.
Romanesco broccoli. Mm-hmm. Tapioca pudding mix, mm-hmm. birch beer, and Elvers.
What's Elvers?
They are baby eels.
Okay. Wait. So tapioca pudding
mix. Not the actual pudding. You got the mix.
And I have eels. And what's the first thing again?
Romanesco broccoli and birch beer.
Okay. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to take the birch beer and I'm going to get it to a nice... I'm going to put it in a pot and get it to a nice sizzle.
Okay.
And then I'm going to... what do they call that when you... then I'm going to blanch the broccoli in birch beer.
Ooh.
So I'm going to put the broccoli in. I'm going to dip it in for about a minute and a half in the birch beer.
Get a little sweetness?
Get a little sweetness.
Okay.
Then I'm going to take the tapioca pudding mix and mix it with a little breadcrumbs and egg. And I'm going to make... I'm going to dip those eels in breadcrumbs and fry them on up, and I'm going to get a nice little eel with tapioca pudding breadcrumbs and birch beer broccoli.
Hmm. It sounds interesting. It sounds more like a meal versus like an appetizer where you pick it.
Oh, I'm sorry.
as one of the judges, I had to bring this up to you, Scott.
You're talking to somebody about eels
and pudding.
I'm going to
take the peanut butter and put it with the jelly on the bread, and I don't know what I call it.
I like to cook, but I don't know what I would do in those situations. Okay.
Ready for the dinner round.
Okay, dinner round.
All right. You have moth beans.
What are moth beans?
They're just a bean.
Okay. Moth bean. Yeah. I'll look it up while you read this.
Powdered milk.
Right.
Cantaloupe.
Mm-hmm.
And bison.
Well, the first thing I'm thinking is like, now this might sound like an appetizer, so maybe I'm going backwards, but I take the bison. You know, grind it up into some ground bison.
Okay.
And mix it with the moth beans, and make a little a little moth bean and bison chili.
Ooh.
You know, spice it up and stuff like that. What's the other thing? I have a cantaloupe.
Powdered milk and cantaloupe.
And then I'm going to take that powdered milk and, you know, try to consolidate it, maybe with a little bit of sugar, and kind of rim the cantaloupe, which might also be kind of dessert, but it's an appetizer dessert kind of thing, and it's a little bit of, I figure if you get a little appetizer, a little bit of dessert, it equals meets in the middle as dinner.
Interesting thought process there. I mean, luckily the other two people screwed up, so you're here into the finals.
All right, good.
All right.
Well, the chili might work.
Chili would. I mean, that was interesting. I like your first idea. It was just not an appetizer.
What the hell am I supposed to do with a cantaloupe?
I mean, you can make a make a reduction sauce with it, something like that.
You've watched Chopped, haven't you?
I've watched.
I feel like they just always say I'm just going to make a reduction. I'm like,
yeah.
I think it's just what you do when you don't know. We're going to reduce it to something,
yeah.
Which basically means burn it till it doesn't taste like it anymore. All right.
And then their first complaint: I don't taste.
Yeah, I don't taste.
I don't taste the cantaloupe with the mulled beans.
You're not supposed to.
All right, your dessert round, Scotty.
Oh, okay.
Instant coffee.
Mm-hmm.
Gummy worms.
Come on.
Beets.
Oh, my God.
And goat's milk.
Gummy worms, beets, instant coffee, and goat's milk. All right. I'm going to take the beets. I'm going to puree the beets, and then I'm going to reduce them. Reduce the beets. And
describe the process of reducing the beets.
I'm just going to puree them and heat them up with a little bit of milk and reduce them.
A little goat's milk?
Yeah. A little goat's milk. Yeah, yeah. Beets and milk. It's going to come out to like a... I'm going to use that to drizzle on something that I'm going to create in a minute.
Okay.
What is it? Gummy worms and...
Instant coffee.
Yeah. Okay. So I'm going to take the instant coffee, right? And I'm going to mix that with a little chocolate mousse. I'm going to grind it in there. And then I'm going to put the worm in it, like those old school like desserts that like kids would have at kids' parties with the worms in the dirt. Okay.
I like it.
Yeah. And then the milk thing, the raspberry.
Well, you put it with the beets already, the milk.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. The milk thing, I'm just going to kind of drizzle it on top. Maybe it'll be like what's coming out of a dirt volcano or something like that. Maybe it's like lava.
You're going to make a dirt volcano in 20 minutes.
Wow. You're dealing with the best here. The best of the best are on Chopped.
I wouldn't mess with you on Podcast Chopped.
Podcast Chopped. We should have an episode of Chopped where we get like three comedians to actually make something. We
got
to eat it. But it should be reverse Chopped. They should try to make it. The nastiest wins it. But yeah, that's what I would do. That's my Chopped meal. Mm. That's hard, man. I can't even imagine actually having to do that in 20 minutes. But that's very, very difficult. But I'm sure Chef Eric Levine would do a much better job. Yeah. But let's take a quick break. All right. Chef Eric Levine. You see it. You want to say Levine, but it's L-E, and then the V is capitalized. So it's like McDonald. Or it's like I don't even know what they call this, whatever it is. But like I said, it's it puts a lot of things in perspective. Like you think your life is bad sometimes when you didn't get enough sleep.
Mm-hmm.
Here's a guy getting through five rounds of cancer, like three different types or whatever it is. Like it's just and pushing, and it's like, well, like, that's what we should all be trying to do, you know? But
went from a death sentence to going out to Las Vegas and opened a restaurant in a couple of years.
Yeah. 2018, next year.
I got a food story. I'm kind of interested about your opinion on this one. I think both of us, we're not really a confrontational bunch of people.
I actually avoid confrontation at all costs.
Yeah.
I hate it.
Yeah, so let me give you this scenario here. I'm up in Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania. I'm doing work.
Right.
And I'm at a Sheetz, which is, I would say, it's a Pennsylvania Wawa, for lack of a better term. So I order a sandwich. I get my drink. I pay for it. I'm coming back, and I'm watching the guy making my food. He builds up the sandwich, wraps it up, tapes it up, and he starts prepping another whoever's order. As he's like finishing up with the other one he's making, he puts the food away and he pushes it, and my food hits the floor. It's totally wrapped.
Okay.
But it hits the floor, and I'm kind of looking at this, and I know it's mine.
Right.
And the kid picks it up, doesn't say a word, hands it off to the other person to put on the ticket and say my number and hand it off to me.
Right.
So it's kind of a weird thing. It's one of those, if he just came up and said, oh, I'm so sorry, I probably wouldn't have blinked an eye because it's wrapped up. if they offered me a nurse sandwich or whatever, I'd be like, no, it's fine. But in a way, I'm kind of pissed off
that he did
that. I didn't even get an offer to say, oh my God, I'm so sorry, can I make you another one?
100%. 100%. You should be pissed off.
Yeah.
Because, listen, when you pay for food, when regardless if it's at a gas station or it's at Chef Eric Levine's place, right? If it's at Morris Tap and Grill, you're paying for the restaurant to give you something, you know. So you're paying for them to prepare your food. So I have the right to send that back. No, I don't send anything back. I have pulled hairs out of food and still eating it, which is kind of weird.
That's a peeve. I will turn around and say, no.
The older I get, it's starting to get like I can't do it anymore.
Because that's the worst feeling, chewing, and all of a sudden, what's that? And then just playing a game of pulling it out and seeing how far it goes. I did that the other night.
Me and my brother were hanging out with the kids, and when cooked burgers, I don't know whose hair it was, but I was like, there was a gigantic hair.
Ugh.
But anyway, you are paying for them to... You're asking to eat their food,
mm-hmm.
Okay? It's not a service for them to... give you food. It's not. They're not doing. You're not doing them a service. They are servicing you. You are the customer.
Mm-hmm.
So even if that fell on the ground and you said, "Dude, that fell on the ground. I want a new one." There should be no argument. Like, okay, fine, and you just write it off. Like it's just okay. We lost $6 there or whatever. Mm-hmm. It is. No, what was it? A sandwich or something like that?
Actually, it was like a chicken burrito.
Yeah. Exactly. So yeah. It fell on the ground. I don't want it. That's on you. That's something as a company you write off as a loss. You lost $6.
Yeah, like somebody's going to even look at it.
No, but I know. But you lost $1.50 there, whatever it is. Okay. So, yeah. No way.
Yeah.
You're not in the wrong at all.
Okay. I was just wondering. And now, would you eat it? Because that's what I did. Because I was starving.
Would I eat it? Yes. I would probably eat it. And that's the problem with me.
Yeah. It's like I want to yell, but at the same time, I'm like, I ain't got time to wait for another burrito.
I have what I call convenient morals because
it's in front of me. It's done.
Yeah. I mean, I could stand for anything, but it's like, it's right here and I'm hungry and I'm going to eat it. You know, it's like the same thing. Like, you know, you want to be green all the time. But you got to get rid of your garbage sometimes. It's going in the trash bin. You know, you want to be green sometimes. Sometimes you got to, you know, you're cold and you got to run the heat when you don't need to run the heat. You know, it's just things. I guess maybe there's first world problems or whatever it is. But it is what it is. But as far as the burrito, man, you didn't say anything.
I didn't say anything, but I can't. When I'm in the car eating, I'm kind of like, God, that was an asshole move. And I was staring right at you.
Yeah, like you go back and wish you what, like you envision in your head what you could have said and like this try, like this amazing moment. Give me
come back in with the burrito. No! Yeah. Slapping on exactly. The ground. I will not take this!
I will. Did you put that on the ground? You did, didn't you?
Plus, it was like a 16-year-old boy. I'm like, yeah, do I really want to ruin this kid's day?
Well, that's the whole thing. It's like you avoid, and he was probably like, oh, boy, I'm not going to serve that guy. I worked in the food. Like I worked at a restaurant for 3.5 years. I never once ever messed with anybody's food. Never once.
Mm.
I'm not just saying that. Like, if I did, I would tell you. But I never once, like people, and I had some crazy people, the things they would order and like want things separated and all that stuff. But you feel like you just don't mess with people's food, man. You just don't. It's like the cardinal rule. I know like in like waiting and stuff like that, they're like, okay, and they spit. And it's, I never once saw any of that. Just to clear, hope that makes you guys feel better out there.
Well, I guess it doesn't happen.
But I'm sure it does. But as at the restaurant I worked at, no one ever like messed with like rub your balls on it or put your butthole on. Never, never, no spit, nothing like that.
What's the worst food experience you had?
I had someone who... Okay, so they came in and they ordered, like, they started with, like, side salads. I brought the salads out. They didn't want the salads because they had to... They wanted to see the kitchen. So they had to...
They wanted to see the kitchen.
Apparently, you're allowed to, like, ask to see the kitchen. And if they say no, you just leave. But these people are like, we want to see the kitchen, how it's prepared. And then it was basically that over and over again. Like, they ordered, like, appetizers and soups and how it's prepared. And
Did you bring into a separate kitchen for each one?
Everything was sent back. And long story short, I got tipped, like 8% on like a pretty expensive bill. Nothing was happy for them. I just remember being like so frustrated. I think I told you before, I still have dreams 10 years, 12 years. So 12, 13 years later.
Okay.
About being in the weeds, like not being able to get to all my tables, like where I have like a million tables and I'm a waiter and I can't get to all of them. And like it's just like this chaos. And then I wake up like, like I can't do it. I have these work dreams. And it's kind of weird, but like it's only waitering. I don't have work dreams of what I do now. I don't have work dreams like of other jobs I've done. It's always waitering because when you get slammed, like you have five tables at once, three tables at once, it is chaos. And like people need to understand that when you see your server working hard and doing a good job. They're doing. Remember, they're making $2.15 an hour. Yeah,
Where that started from? Tipping?
No,
it started from the Depression, where they couldn't afford full salaries for waiters. So in order to accommodate for it, they came up with the deal where we only pay waiters $2-3 an hour. Obviously, in Depression, who knows that 15 cents,
a penny,
yeah. And then it was the responsibility of the people who come in to tip. And apparently, we're about the only country that does tipping.
Yes. When I was in London for a semester, they were like, don't worry about tipping. But the other thing that's BS is, like, people be like, yeah, they won't take your tips. They will take
somebody is going to pick up that money.
Yeah. Stop with the they won't pick up your tips. They don't even accept them. Yes, they do. but yeah, I would have I probably would have done something similar to you. I probably wouldn't have said anything, and then I'd be like, damn, I should have said something.
Yeah.
I should have had the burrito hold out and stomp my feet and made a big scene. But that's just not what happens. Yeah.
Nastiest food story for me was, I remember my brother's ex-fiance, we went to a McDonald's and she got like a 20-piece McNugget. And they said something about there was something wrong with the fryers or anything like that, but still came home with it. And I remember I bit into one and it was like a rubber band. And it was the most nastiest
Food story. Yeah, I got one too. I went to Stewart's. I still don't go to Stewart's to this day. Like, my parents brought me to it and I bit into a cheeseburger. I'm like, this tastes weird. Took a second bite. This tastes weird. Opened up, the cheeseburger was green.
Oh,
straight up green.
Oh, that's now that's where
pretty horrible.
Yeah. If my burrito was green, I'd have been back in that door.
Dude, it was green. I mean, I was 11, 12, something like that. But I still, to this day, I'm like, Stewart's, I don't know. Like, it was green. It was green and, like, moldy looking. My parents, would, if they were on here, they would vouch, be like, yeah, it was green. It was in, like, Virginia or somewhere. But we always had a Stewart's up the street from us. And after that, I would never, like, my parents would be like, oh, we're going to get Stewart's tonight. I'd be like, nope, I don't
God
want.
Bless you.
Yeah.
Bring me a root beer.
Yeah, pretty bad. Pretty bad. But let's get out of here, man.
All
right. Let's get out of here. What do you got to promote?
I'll just promote my comedy page, facebook.com/TheBurl721. Working on some new stuff I hope to release sometime soon on, little comedy bits here and there and eventually get back into the stand-up area. So
cool. And so this will be out on first, so I guess if you guys are in the area, on Cinco de Mayo. I'm going to be doing a very fun show for a guy that I met called Don Michalowski. And he is running a show at Rutherford Hall. Mm. Rutherford Hall is not in Rutherford. Hold on. Rutherford Hall. It's like in Alamuchi or something like that. So let me see. Rutherford Hall is in Hackettstown, New Jersey. And it's a really fun show. There's Don Michalowski. There's myself, Jackie Byrne, and then headlining is Mark Rigadonna. So that's going to be a fun show. What better way to spend Cinco de Mayo with some of my favorite comics? So that should be a lot of fun. So with that, I want to thank... Chef.
I want a jank.
I know. I still got pineapple
time. I want a jank check.
Yeah. Chef Eric Levine. Go check him out and all his stuff. With that, what you can do is subscribe to the podcast and share it with people.
Yeah.
Listen on Laughable or Stitcher or iTunes or the numerous amount of apps, or just Google us and send it to somebody.
Exactly.
You know, put it on Facebook. Say, hey, this podcast is cool.
I laughed my ass
off. It's interesting. Really interesting interview. But other than that, thanks, Chef Eric. And this one's for you. Goodbye. Nope, wrong one. There we go.
That one was not for you.
Chef.
Check.
From Brooklyn. But anyway, life is funny. Laugh at it. Keep doing it. You're back. Bye-bye.
See you.